This series is called Who Me? Stories of Rabbinic Self-Consciousness. And when I pitched the idea, my esteemed colleagues were like, what on earth does that mean? And I was like, I don't know yet. I'm not sure. And hopefully together we'll get to build it together. But I really wanted to look at where the rabbis talk about themselves. And they do it a lot. The truth is, I don't know if you've ever met any rabbis, but we like to talk about ourselves a lot. And the rabbis of the Talmud talk about themselves a lot. And I wanted to pick sort of different motifs that occur in how the rabbis talk about themselves, when they talk about themselves, where they talk about themselves, and what does it mean about me? I don't mean me, Nefe Epstein, I mean us. What does it mean when a rabbi talks about themselves? What can it teach about how we talk about ourselves? And why I should care what these rabbis have to say and think, and what are the lessons I'm going to take away? So that's really the question that we're going to look at over the next few weeks. And we're going to see some really fun and crazy rabbinic stories and think about how they can be interesting and important to us as we go. So just so you know, the term self-conscious apparently originates in the 1680s, which is pretty recent, I would say. Maybe I just think that 500 years is recent, but because I like rabbinic literature. And it classically was understood to mean aware of one's actions. We're going to look at sort of how were the rabbis aware of their own actions, and it was prominent in Locke's writing from a combination of self and conscious, right? Being aware, right, of what the self is actually doing. The morbid sense of preoccupied with one's own personality first appears in 1834, which is an interesting idea. Like, what is the relationship between being aware of yourself and then being obsessed with yourself? I think it's something that's interesting and important for us to think about as we go, okay? So also interesting and important to notice and to know is that when I say the rabbis, I could be talking about anyone from zero, right, anyone who lived in Jewish history from zero or pre-zero even, right, to today, right? So we're going to be looking at, and we're going to constantly be noticing who is speaking, what generation are they from, where do they live. Today we're going to meet rabbis from the land of Israel. Today we're going to meet rabbis from the time period of the Mishnah, right? So we're talking between 0 and 200. We're going to look at the end of the Mishnaic time period today, and then a little bit post. And we're going to be looking at rabbis from Babel, from Babylonia, and seeing, are they different? How do they relate to each other? And when they talk about themselves, are they more self-conscious? Are they more protective of themselves? So sort of looking at that as well, okay? Also, very important to know when we're looking at Talmudic literature is that there are other rabbis who are behind the scenes. We like to call those the stump. That's right. The ones don't look behind the curtain. They're just quietly pulling the strings here, okay? Right? Look over there. We're just going to arrange everything. No, we don't, you don't have to know who we are. We're just going to arrange it all, right? And that's going to be very interesting for us. We're going to sort of look at those people, even though we don't know their names, and we don't necessarily know what the material is that they had to work with. We're going to look sort of at the end result and try and figure out, in their arrangement of how the rabbis speak about themselves, what are they trying to tell us? Today, they're really going to have a major, major role, okay? And there's two schools of thought. Some believe that they remain anonymous, dafka specifically because they're not trying to have a prominent role in Jewish history. And we're going to look at an opinion, we're going to start with this, which says, what are you talking about? Of course, they are trying to have a prominent role. Whenever you edit a work, and especially with the magnitude in which the Stamaitic voice, right, the voice of the anonymous comes up in the Talmud, of course they had a major project and they were major, major crafters. Is that a word?
Craftspeople.
Thank you. They're major craftspeople of the Talmud. So we're going to look at that. We're going to see that inside. Okay. I'm going to make a big pedagogic mistake now, and that's okay. I'm going to hand you a handout, and then I'm going to still want you to pay attention to me. So let's see if we can do that. Okay, guys? So can I have a volunteer, please, to read the first source on your page? Is by Professor Muli Vidas, who is a professor at Princeton University. And he wrote a book about how he feels the Talmud was constructed, and he's dealing with much of prior scholarship. And he has this piece here that I thought was very interesting and important for us to think about as we go into our project. So will someone please read this for us? Yes, Lauren.
The Babli's creators themselves are not hiding. They are there in almost every sugyo, structuring the discussion and leading the reader, or listener, through the sources, expressing their voice in anonymous discussion that organizes most of the Talmud. While their choice of anonymity in itself might be seen as an act of deference towards their predecessors, their literary practice betrays a different set of priorities.
Dun, dun, dun. I like how you read that so, you know, what's the word? Sinisterly? Sinister? Was very, oh, different set of priorities. So what do you guys, what is Muli Vidas saying to us? Thoughts, ideas? What do you think he's saying to us here? Yes. I don't know your name, though.
My name's Lily.
Lily.
They actually have a lot of power in their anonymity because they can pull the strings and control the text and are sort of not subject to criticism because we don't know who they are.
Excellent. Very nice. Right. Two very important points, right? They can control it, and they're specifically using their anonymity as a tool, right, which is incredibly powerful. Excellent. Very nice. Yeah, Avi, go ahead.
They're everywhere, and they are not differential.
Mm. Effect, right, they're everywhere is really great. It's true. They're everywhere. The editors are everywhere. You can't remove their mark on the Talmud, and they're not differential. Why not? He's saying, wouldn't you assume, right? He's working off an assumption. If I didn't say who I was, then obviously it's a place of humility and deference, but they're not differential. Why not? They don't have to be. Excellent. And? They're changing things. Very nice. And I think inherent there he's saying, arrangement, right, is an active act. An active act. Excellent. Right? Arrangement is, right, is an act of control. It's an act of creation. And they know that. And it's true, it's not about my voice necessarily, but when I arrange stories, I am creating a narrative. And that's going to be very important, my friends, because we're about to look at, okay, now this is the hard part. This is when you have to look at me and not at the sheet in front of you. It's very hard because it's a great piece of Talmud, and I know we all just want to start reading it. I do too. But I just want to do a little bit of background, okay? What we're about to look at is a piece from the Babylonian Talmud, and I'm sorry it doesn't say Babylonian. It should say Babylonian Talmud Ta'anit. A piece from the Babylonian Talmud from Masechet Ta'anit, Tractate Ta'anit, which deals with the laws of fasting, and specifically fasting when we are lacking rain, okay, right? We're in a drought, and we fast in order to bring the rain. It happens to be that this sugya comes in this section of the Talmud. Sugya means section of Talmud. This section of the Talmud comes in a conversation about not just fasting for rain, right? If I fast and I ask God for forgiveness, God will forgive me and bring the rain, but also comes in a section of fast and when terrible things happen to a place, right? There's a theological point here, which is the reason why terrible things are happening is because I have sinned. Good, right. People are scared to say it. People are afraid to make that statement, right? And I understand why. But that is certainly a very important theological point in Masechet Ta'anit, okay? So, right, the reason why this is happening is because we've sinned. If we fast and ask for forgiveness, then God will hear our prayers and grant us forgiveness, and then the bad things will go away. Namely, for Masechet Ta'anit, it will rain, okay? So we're about to look at a series of seven stories, and that's very common for the Talmud Bavli, specifically, that stories come in an arc of seven, okay? We're going to look at, because we only have an hour together, we're going to look at story number one, story number four, and story number seven. We can't do all seven stories. If we had another hour, we would do all seven stories. Next week, when you come back, and you have the whole hour before 8 o'clock, then you will look at a huge chunk of text, and we can talk about it all because you'll already be prepared, and it will be awesome. But for this week, since we're all starting at 8 o'clock together, we're only going to look at sources 1, 4, I mean, this part together at 8 o'clock. Obviously, we heard beautiful Torah from 7 to 8, I know. But this part together at 8, right? So we're going to only look at stories 1, 4, and 7. And important to understand is often in an arc of rabbinic stories, when I have 7, the middle story, story number 4, is critical. It's the one I want to tell. So we're going to look at how do we open these stories, how do we close, and what is the point of story number 4 that is so critical to our understanding of, I believe, the entire arc of these stories. Okay? Yes, sir.
Can you just remind me your name? I'm so sorry.
Daniel, sorry.
No worries.
Go ahead.
I forget my own name sometimes.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I guess I'm just wondering,
So if the reason bad things happen is that we sin, is that like, is that saying that we have control there? Is that cause and effect?
Great. Such an interesting and important question. Let's save it till we look at the stories inside, and we'll open it back up if we think it's what the stories are talking about, which I think is an interesting question. Okay? Fair enough? But don't forget it. We'll bring it back at 8:30. Okay?
I couldn't forget it if I tried.
Okay, good.
It's not my name.
Nice. Okay, friends. So what we're going to do now is we're going to do a little bit of chavruta. Just a sentence. What is chavruta? Learning? Partnered learning, paired learning. Why do we do chavruta?
So that we're not sleeping.
Excellent. We've all had very long days. Everyone's gone to work today. Good point. Keeps us awake. Excellent. You know, I want you to know that that's always the number one answer. The first answer, because it keeps us awake. Those are the people who are really just saying, give me a shot of espresso. I understand. I'm with you. I had three. Don't worry. Okay, good. Why else do we do chavruta? Why?
Because if you don't, it'll lead to foolishness.
Why? Yay. But why? Tell me what you learned. Why will it lead to foolishness? Why?
Because you'll come up with your own grand ideas that may be completely off.
Good. So you need someone to check you, right? Okay, good. Excellent. Very, very nice. Chavruta is a huge part of what we do at all of the wonderful institutions that are hosting this event. So we're going to do some chavruta. You're going to turn to the person next to you. You're going to look at stories 1, 4, and 7. And I just want to point out, wait, stay with me for one more second. I just want to point out that there are questions. Look, it says in bold, please read stories 1, 4, and 7. And there are questions right there, okay? Don't look at Sanhedrin yet. Now you're going to look at it. We'll come back in 12 and a half minutes you have. So first of all, let's just clarify one thing, because this came up in many, many chavrutas, and I think it's very, very important to understand. Okay, so the first thing that's happening on your pages is Rabbi Yehuda the Prince is, in fact, Rabbi Yehuda the Prince, but not Rabbi Yehuda, the Rabbi Yehuda the Prince. Rabbi Yehuda the, I know, confused us. Okay, I'm sorry. That's why it's always good to learn the text in the original. Okay, so a little plug there. So if you look in the, if those of you who can, the Hebrew says, Rabbi Yehuda Nesia, okay? He is the grandson of Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, also known as, a.k.a. Rebbe, who makes an appearance in story number 4, okay? So in other words, Rebbe is the grandfather. He is the redactor of the Mishnah. He lives at the closing of the Mishnah around 220. Rabbi Yehuda Nesia, who's in story number 1, who features in story number 1, is his grandson, is also who is he is referring to himself as Yehuda ben Gamliel. Okay, sorry, that was confusing. I apologize. Next week, now you have an excuse to come back next week because the sources will be correct. Okay, Rabbi Yehuda Nesia. So that's important to understand, and the generational pieces here are really quite important, and who the leaders are is really quite important, actually. So it's good that we're going to straighten that out right at the beginning. Okay, so basically the first story is actually a rabbi from Eretz Yisrael. He lives in the land of Israel 2 generations after the Mishnah is closed, which means it's contemporaneous to the beginning of the rabbinic communities, or
the proliferation.
I don't think that's the word I was looking for. No, it's not. The importance, perhaps, there you go, just be simple. The importance of the community in Babel is growing and becoming more important, and Eretz Yisrael, right? So it's at the same time that these things are happening, okay? So that's very important to understand as we get to the ends of these stories. Okay, so Rabbi Yehuda Nesia, we're told, right? Our story opens with Rabbi Yehuda Nesia. See, it's very natural to see that. Gazar ta'anita. He decreed that there should be a fast. Okay? By Rachme, he prayed, right? He asked for mercy. He prayed. He said to God, right? We don't actually get to hear what his prayer is, but we are told that the result of his prayer and his declaring of a fast is what? No rain. Useless. Good. It's good. Good. Right? No rain. Useless does not work. Lo ata mitra. Just before we get anywhere further, what do you guys think about that?
It happens.
It happens. Okay, excellent. Your name, sir?
Michael.
Michael says to us, what? What? Okay. All right, it happens to all of us. We pray, and sometimes the answer is no, or there is no answer, or this is a whole other conversation, that, right? But it's important here. It is underlying here, but it's, right? Okay, so we pray. We don't get what we want. Okay, yefeh, good. Yes, sir. Tell me your name.
Naftali.
Naftali.
On one hand, it's kind of defeats, I mean, you think that the whole point of Tanit is if you want rain, you should fast, but all of these stories are telling us it's not a guarantee.
Yefeh.
You might fast, and but actually, if you think about it, if it always worked, then there would be no Maseches Tainis because you could just have one sentence and say, hey, keep fasting and, you know, the rain will come.
Yefeh. Okay, excellent. So many important points there, okay, right? First of all right, it's not a formula. It's not formulaic, right? If you fast and if you pray, then the rain will come. Nope. That's not the point here, right? And that's a really, really beautiful idea, right? It's not a given, necessarily. And also, perhaps, you haven't done enough of the work that, right, that is actually necessary. We have to ask ourselves why. Why is it true that he didn't get the rain, right? I think it's really an important point here. But, okay, excellent. Very, very nice. Yes. Tell me your name.
Juanit.
Juanit.
Sounds like a very dramatic silence. Like, shtikawim, there's no rain. Very, very loud.
Good. And what is the silence saying?
The lesson, something is wrong. Something's not. It's like, go listen. I'm not answering on purpose.
Good. Something is wrong. Yeah. Something is off here, okay? And if I am an innocent reader of this text, what would I say was wrong?
You didn't do it right.
Good, okay, good. Your name?
Shira.
Shira, yes. Hi, Shira. Okay, so Shira says to us, right, he didn't do it right, there was something wrong in his prayer. Right? I would think, maybe Yehuda Nasiya, it can't be that important, right? Because many, many times, we have rabbinic stories, where rabbis, by Rachmei, they ask, right, they ask for mercy, and lo and behold, they get the mercy that they desire. There are many stories like that throughout the Talmud. Maybe there's something wrong with this guy. Or, alternatively, Shira, maybe there's something wrong with his prayer. Okay, so that's an interesting question. What is the problem? And the only way we're going to know the problem, my friends, is
reading more.
Maybe by reading number four. Also by reading number one and seeing what fixes the problem. So let's look at that, because I think it's actually very interesting, right? So no rain falls, right? And I agree, there's a that's bad. I love the fact, I just want to say I love the fact that these seven stories tell us that. Just admit, like, actually, like Michael said, sometimes even the great ones, like, God does not necessarily answer my prayer. Just that. I cannot imagine writing a work. I don't know if anyone's read it, like, biographies of tzaddikim lately, right? Of great ones, of great, right, great rabbis lately. But certainly there's no, he prayed and he wasn't answered. That does not appear, right? Right? He prays and great miracles happen. That happens all the time, right? So just the fact that we're willing to tell these stories and say, right, below Atamitra, the rain does not come, I think is really interesting. And therefore, surprising and also somewhat not surprising, but really interesting because I think that there's deep lessons for us to learn here. Okay, so the rain does not come. You can imagine the community starts to talk, right? He thereupon exclaims, right? And, right? Oh, where's the search committee? Okay, so, right? What does he say? What does he say, right? What is his response to this, the rain not coming?
I'm not good enough.
I'm not good enough. Excellent, excellent. That's exactly right. I'm not good enough. I'm not like whom?
Shmuel.
And the Shmuel that we're referring to here, right, when we talk about Shmuel Haramati, we're talking here about Shmuel Hanavi, right? Shmuel all the way back in the book of Samuel, because his father Elkanah is called Min Haramatayim Tzofim, right? He looks over, there's a lot of debate what that means, whether, right, it's a place, et cetera, et cetera. But let's just go with, in the Bavli here, I believe, is understanding that Shmuel Haramati, we're talking here about the son of Elkanah, and therefore, right, we're talking about Shmuel the prophet, i.e., right, a Navi, those of us who are in Rav Jeff Fox's class, right, talked about this idea of prophecy. I think it's quite interesting that it makes an appearance here. And he says, right, ugh, I wish I was like Shmuel. Yes,
yeah.
Daniel.
So I don't read Hebrew, so I'm not sure that this is substantiated, but he says is that there's a difference between them. He doesn't say,
good.
I'm worse. He doesn't say he's better.
Okay, you're fair.
There's a disconnection even.
Good. And what's the difference?
What?
What's the difference? Presumably, based on this text, what's the difference? Just inferring from his what he's exclaiming.
That, I think that, if there's a difference, it's the same difference for both sides, right? Like, it's not, there's just a disconnection, I think,
okay.
That's how I read this.
Okay. Good. So there's a disconnection between these two, right? These two personalities, right? I think what's inherent here is I could not bring the rain, right? And Shmuel could. Now, thank God we have Rashi. I didn't bring it to you, but I'll just tell it to you outside. Rashi here, a very important French commentary, perhaps the most important commentary on the Talmud, says to us that this is referring back to an occurrence in Shmuel Aleph, Samuel 1, chapter 12, where we're told that there was, in fact, a moment where Shmuel calls to God and God brings the rain. And the people see God bringing the rain and they come to Shmuel and they say, Oh boy, we're in big trouble. We're in big trouble. We did this terrible sin. And what was the sin that the people did to Shmuel, my friend? What did they do to Samuel? Anyone?
They asked for a king.
That's right. Right? Samuel's great heartbreak comes in the fact that the people that he was leading ask for a king. He really is heartbroken. And God has to say to him, what are you heartbroken about? I'm heartbroken, right? They asked for a king over me, not you, right? So, which is amazing, right? It's an amazing moment. But I think it's interesting just to see and to notice here, I think it's really interesting that Shmuel, according to Rashi's understanding of what Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya is saying to us, Shmuel was able to bring the rain and Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya was not able to bring the rain. But critically, Shmuel's rain taught the people that in their asking for a king, they were wrong. The rain taught them that. That was when they realized it, right? Which is very interesting, guys, because we were just talking about what does it mean that the rain didn't come for Yehuda Nasiya, whereas when the rain did come for Shmuel, it taught them, it taught the people something. And the specific thing that it taught them was that asking for a king is wrong. Now who, just remind yourselves, who's saying this? I wish I was like Shmuel. Yeah, that's right, a prince, right? Now, it's a very interesting question what this means in the sea and whether was it really a prince or was it a rabbinic position, wasn't it? There's lots of wonderful literature on that we can talk about more afterwards, right? How, were they scholars? Were they not scholars? But certainly, they had a political role in addition to their rabbinic role, which is very interesting. And I wonder, what do you guys think about that? Now that you have all those pieces of information, okay? Right? Yehuda Nasiya is upset about it, about the fact that he can't bring the rain. And he compares himself to Shmuel, who was the last prophet leader prior to the kingship beginning, right? And he, as in a position of the king, even if he's not the king, but he's certainly in an aristocratic position here, what do you think he's saying? Yes,
well, please. He also seems to be saying that the people who live in his time are worse off than the people who lived in Shmuel's time, or generationally.
Good, good. So do you think they're worse off, or do you think that they're worse? And also, I don't know your name.
Serene. Well, he says, woe to the generation that finds itself in such plight.
Yeah.
So, that's the English. I don't know the Hebrew, but that has a little
it's
bit
a of... great question here. I think it's a really, and there's different interpretations here. Some think it actually is a knock of his generation. Oh, why is the rain not coming? Not because of me, but because of my generation. And some read it as, woe to this generation that they have...
A bad leader.
A leader like me. In Shmuel's generation, they had a leader who was able to criticize them and chastise them as appropriately, and when he brought the rain, he was able to teach them a lesson, right?
Does one of them go better with the last line? In other words, if he feels grieved, does he feel grieved because he feels inadequate?
It's a great question. What do you think? I think that's a million-dollar question that Serena's asking us, Michael.
Well, one of the biggest problems with the leader is you become arrogant, and by showing... understand that you doubt yourself and you have your own failings is what's bringing the rain on. So he's learning from his mistakes.
Yeah. So you're saying that, according to your read, Michael, the correct read of Oy Lador Hazeh, right, is about...
It's about his poor leadership.
Right.
Not
good.
Necessarily.
Yeah. Right? I feel so bad for you guys. You got me, and you didn't get Shmuel? Oh, terrible. Okay? And then at that moment when he says that, what happens?
The rain falls.
Which means, good. So if we're reading it this way, then what does that mean? What is this story trying to teach me? When does rain fall?
When
What?
The wrong time.
When does the rain fall? Yeah, say it loud, be brave. When you're humble, good, exactly, right? Halash date, the story here is looking for the depression, the sadness, the self-awareness of Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya here. That's what this story is looking for, I think. And once it comes, lo and behold, right? Now, you should know, and we're not going to get there, but source 6 is very similar. It's actually a mirror. Sources 1 and 6 mirror. Don't go there. Stay with me. But later you'll go there, right? Sources 1 and 6 mirror each other. They also have this idea of halash date. So it's interesting to notice this keeps repeating. Yes, UD.
I have a question. We don't know what was this, I wonder if it said, what was the reason for a rain and then a fast? Was it a famine or just
yeah,
rain?
Yeah, fast. Great point. Great. Great.
Ugh.
Beautiful.
Other
beautiful.
We don't
know. It's a great question. It's really an excellent question. And in fact, it gets even stronger when you look at, don't look, just stay with me. But if you will ever look at story number 2, it gets even stronger because there it seems to be that the house of the Nasi declares a fast and doesn't inform the scholars of its generation. Doesn't inform Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish, who are the great scholars. So that, I think, is an interesting point also. Is there a power move by declaring a fast, right? Is it somehow, right? And is that where he's failing? The rain doesn't come because God says, what? Not only is it not a formula, but I'm not here to show that you're the Nasi. It's not my job, right? And then he realizes, oh, maybe, right? So I think that's a really excellent point. What is happening is a really excellent, excellent point. Fair. Good. Yes. Wendy.
It's also interesting because I think in general the sense of Masechet Tanit is that like there isn't enough, there is a drought and that's why you declare a fast. And the whole issue is that, you know, they need rain and sad the leaders can't provide it. And what's interesting is when Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya compares himself to Shmuel, the whole point in that story is that it's like actually not the season of rain. The rain shouldn't be there.
Right, right.
No one needs it. It's only there to make a point. So I think that it's not just that like you can pray for rain and get it, but like Shmuel, like, He was actually just doing it to show his power, and it seems like, and yet he was answered. Whereas here,
right,
like it's about
right,
you know, you actually the community needs the rain, and we're
you're fair. So good. So in other words, Wendy, tell me this is what you're saying. So it's definitely not a power grab.
No, what I was saying is that I think one like another way in which he is so far removed from Shmuel is that his community actually
needs
rain,
rain
and
right.
he's not able to help them get it. Whereas in Shmuel, like the reason why everybody was so astounded by the rain there is that it was specifically not the season of rain; they weren't expecting it, and he only calls upon the rain not for their good, but just to sort of show them that he's right in what he's saying.
Right. Yeah. Beautiful. It's very nice. Thank you, Wendy. Daniel, I think it's interesting because it goes back to your point also about the control piece, right? He does. Right back to Naphtali's point also, he can't control the rain coming, but there does seem to be a direct control, or that's not a word, direct result of his depression / humility brings the rain, right? So it's an interesting question you were raising before.
Cause and effect onto it as observers, but we don't have to say, we can say that
the rain was just late a week. Right.
What?
Right, the rain was just late.
Well, I'm not saying that I think the story is told in a way that makes us ask these questions, but I definitely think that, like, you know, for us to gather from the story, oh, so if we just feel grief and we think that we're terrible, rain will come.
Right.
I think that might be
might not happen? Is that what you're suggesting? That might not be...
Might not be the most responsible...
okay, good. Okay, good.
Something cathartic going on between the first one and the fourth one,
Good.
Transformed.
Good.
So that it's not necessarily about reward, punishment, rain, not rain, but it's the individual who has to transform himself, herself, into be something that they weren't before.
Good. Excellent. Good. Yeah.
I don't see it yet in number 7, but...
Okay, good. Beautiful. Good. So let's go to number 4 because we haven't had a chance to look at it yet. Okay? Source number 4. Okay? So this is Rebbe. This is the grandfather now. We heard about the grandson. Here comes the grandfather. Okay? And this one, to me, I got to be honest with you, this was more shocking. Much more shocking of a story. First one, I get it. He's not sure of his own power. Nebuch for the generation that has him as a leader. Okay, I get it. But Rebbe, my friends, Rebbe Yehuda Nasi, perhaps the most important rabbi of our history, right? The compiler / redactor, however you want to understand what he did with the Mishnah, right? Rebbe Gazar Ta'anita Veloata Mitra. Really? It's really, really is shocking. We should really be falling off our chairs a little more, okay? It's shocking. Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi? Really? No worries. This guy Ilfa shows up. And he makes it, I just want to be clear, he makes another appearance earlier. He makes another appearance earlier in Ta'anit, and there's a lot that goes on with him, so there's a lot more to say about this character. But in the meantime, many scholars on this piece write that it's not important that it was necessarily Ilfa, but the idea here is he is definitely not a rabbi, which is why it's quite fascinating, right, that there are those who say that actually it's Rebbe Ilfi, right, because it's a very interesting question whether or not this person is of the academy, of the school, does he have rabbinic power, or is he simply a guy who got up to daven at that moment? He got up to pray, and he gets up there, and he, right, nachi kamek, right, means he goes in front of the ark, he passes before the ark, he's about to lead tefillah, and he says, Mashiva ruach, and lo and behold, the ruach comes, right? Marina Geshem, and lo and behold, the rain comes, okay? He utters the prayer for remembrance, for remembering the rain, right, and the result is that the wind and the rain come immediately, okay? Right away, they come. What is Rebbe's response? How'd you do that?
What's special about you?
Who are you? And what do you do? And how can I get some? No. I didn't say that part, right? But who are you, right? What do you do? What is your merit? He's asking here, by what merit is it that you are? I'm Rebbe Yehuda HaNasi. I mean, you can imagine, right, how much he has given for the Jewish people, how much he has sacrificed, how he has, right, dedicated his life to the Jewish people, and his community needs rain, as Wendy pointed out, they're asking for rain, they need rain, and he's asking for it, right, and the rain does not come, and, right, what is this Ilfa guy? What does he bring to the table? And what's his response? What's his response? Good, chesed, a very, very important point. He does chesed, right? I live in a poor place where most people can't afford wine for kiddush and havdalah, and I provide everyone in my community with kiddush and havdalah. He says here, right, the word terach is used here, right? I trouble myself, I take pains, I go out of my way to do that. Do you think that there are possibly, it's true that Rebbe probably gave a lot of charity in his life and did a lot of chesed for the Jewish people? Yeah. I'm just asking, what do you think? Probably, I would assume so, right? Probably did. So what is unique about what this person does that he merited to bring the wind and the rain immediately? Yeah, Yudi, go ahead.
I think the important thing here is not the amount of money he spends, the amount of time, but that he allows other people to do the mitzvah. So mitzvah brings another mitzvah,
Yofet.
And in his case,
excellent.
There are many mitzvahs.
Good, very nice, right? His action allows Jewish people to fulfill more mitzvah. Okay, good, Yofet. Yes, sir.
Lenny. And, I mean, again, we could ask the same question. Doesn't Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi do the same?
Great. I mean, yeah. Great. Thank God for the Mishnah. That's what I think. That's what I say, right? Absolutely. Okay, good. Yeah, Serene.
I have a question, though, which is the other thing that I'm noticing here, and you can ignore the certain one, is here, it seems like the communal stuff doesn't work. It's all based on an individual. So these are communal fasts, right?
Great. Okay, good.
And but it's always based on the merit of the individual.
Yes, sir. Very nice point, right? We were asking before, right? Your point was perhaps there's a problem with the generation, right? Good. Very, very nice point, right? Is there a communal issue that's happening? Which, by the way, is what maybe causes us to have a drought in the first place, right? And I need these individuals, right? The Yechidei Skula, right? These individuals of great merit and power. Okay. Yes, sir. Can you tell me your name again?
Judah,
sorry.
My initial reaction was that perhaps having a comparison where there's one community with more need, even if there is sort of a normal habitual need to, like, get rain, because there's been a couple of weeks, but it hasn't been serious.
Right.
You have an example where this is real serious desperation. You can juxtapose that. Yeah. The other thing that I just wanted to bring up was, this is just, it seems, not gratuitously, but it seems like subversive. It just seems like I want to upset the normal order of things. I want to show that the way things are, the way leaders normally act, the way leaders normally respect it and get results, things don't always work according to that, and I just want to make that point.
Your friend. Who is I want to make that point?
Not me.
Right.
The story wants to make that point.
The story wants, and maybe even the arc of these stories wants to make that point, right? I would normally got ready because our time needs but I can. Oh, the point of these stories is below Atamitra, right? It doesn't come. Okay, good. Very, very nice. I think it's a very, very interesting and important point. Yes. Tell me your name again.
Lily.
Sorry, Lily. Sorry, you said it already. Okay.
There's a different like scale that's happening here, right? Rabi is doing things that are like on this big universal scale that are affecting everybody. And this man, he's providing kiddush for this one little village, right? This one village that like we don't even get the name of. And maybe if he lives in this village,
good point.
The fact that he provides wine every single week, right? It seems to be maybe a greater percentage of his like time is spent on this thing. Mm-hmm. Or his energy goes a lot more into doing this one small thing than like if Rabi is passing out wine.
Good, excellent. Okay, good. I think it's a very, very nice point, right? So much of his life, perhaps, is dedicated to this. Also, there's an interesting point here of self-perception. Even if he does give the same amount of wine, I mean, probably less than what Rebbe's able to, when he's asked what his merits are, right? He doesn't, you know, pull out his resume. It's not what he, right? What's interesting here is the thing that's important to him to say is that he's a person who does this, which I think is really quite important. I'm so sorry. I see all of your beautiful hands, and I really want to take them, but we're running out of time, and it's late. So I just want to suggest one thing, and I want to point out one thing. It seems to me that part of what's going on in this story is Rebbe Yehuda Nasi is versus the little guy, right? The little guy, and the little guy who worries about the little village and worries about, right, just a little bit of wine. That's his job, right? And somehow those two things are different. Now, I wanted to point out one thing, though. What words does he say?
Nothing.
No, he prays. Sorry, Ilfa. Sorry, excuse me, Michael. What does Ilfa say? Yeah. What is that? Yeah, it's prayer. It's prayer. And who told me I have to say those things at the right time?
Rabbi.
Yeah, the rabbis, right? That's interesting. And what does he make sure that he gives out? Wine to do what? Kiddush and Havdalah. Now, Kiddush and Havdalah can be done, my friends. And in fact, we fulfill the biblical obligation of Kiddush and Havdalah actually through
prayer
and words. And actually, the rabbis come along and they say, they're the ones who say to us, how do you do this? Zichru al-Yayin. You have to remember Shabbat on the wine, the beginning and the end. So I want us to notice, actually, it's quite interesting to me, that actually, Ilfa here is doing two things that are of rabbinic nature, right? And yet, do you notice that? You see what I'm saying? I think that's really fascinating, right? The little Jew, the little guy, right, vis-a-vis Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, is actually doing what the rabbi said, and in that, plus, I would like to suggest, plus his taking responsibility for people, which is exactly what I think Rabbi Yehuda Nasi was upset about himself about, right? That he wasn't able to do that. He has two things that are important. One, he allows more people to do mitzvot, but he does allow more people to do rabbinic, right, injunctions, which I think is very, very important. And he uses his abilities to do chesed, right? To bring about more kindness and taking care, more responsibility for the community, which I think is a direct critique of Rebbe. Maybe Rebbe's doing it too, but it's somehow lacking in some way. There are places, and I think there's something very interesting here about power. When I have power and I am the leader of the community, there are by definition going to be those little people that I don't even see. I want to. Maybe I'm Rabbi Yehuda Nasi. I'm not trying to say anything bad about it, but I think the story is saying, by definition, when you're Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, you're going to miss places. You're going to miss places, and that's an important point that I think is happening in this story. Okay. Four more minutes. Ready? Everybody with me? Yes? Okay, here we go. Number 7. Rava. Incredibly important rabbi in Babylonia. Okay, it's actually interesting, by the way, I didn't point this out, but stories 1, 2, 3, and 4 seem to take place in Eretz Yisrael, and then stories 5, 6, and 7 are about Babylonian rabbis. But interestingly, with Rava, right, once again, Gazar Tanita, right, by Rachme Veloat Amitra. Once again, the same formula, right, declares a fast, asks for mercy, and the rain does not come, okay? And again, Rava, right, He is one of the heavy hitters, okay? Very, very important rabbi in the time period of the Babylonian Talmud, okay? Incredibly important rabbi. The people come to him, and this time it really is a little bit more of the people. People come to him and they say, that's right. You know, two generations ago, they didn't have this problem. The last rabbi always made sure to shake our hands when we walked in the door, right? So there's a lot here, right? It's so interesting to me, right? That, I think, is very interesting, by the way. Notice this is the first time, actually, let's go back to your point, Serene, that we're actually hearing from the people. It's actually an interesting point, right? It's the first time that we're seeing the people here, okay? And he says, right? Right? Well, Amar Lahu, he responds to them. He said, well, what? My Avid, right? If it's because of learning, Rabbi Yehuda and me? Come on. I'm Rava, right? What are you talking about, right? He only learned this area of material, only Nezikin. He only learned, right, damages. We learn all six starim. He's great. It's great that he was, you know, he's a real scholar in this area, right? Damning with faint praise right there, okay? But the point there is, I think what he's saying is, the law had not developed to a point that he, and we developed the law, we expanded it, there's so much more to learn now, we've expanded the curriculum tremendously, right? And in fact, he goes on to say, Rabbi Yehuda reached certain places in the Mishnah, specifically in Masechet Uktzin, which is seen to be a very difficult and sort of esoteric area of purity and impurity law, which is also the last tractate of the Mishnah, right? When he would get there, he would say, oh yeah, my teachers talked about this. We spend a lot of time working on this piece, even though it seems to be esoteric and even though it seems to be sort of intellectual and not practical in our lives. We spend a lot of time working on this, right? And yet, now this is Rava's words, guys. Rava's still speaking. And yet, when Rabbi Yehuda removed one shoe preparing for the rain to come, right? Rain falls. But when we cry out the whole day, no one pays heed to us, right? I should say heed, right? No one listens to us. Who's no one? God. And whose fault is it, my friends?
Unclear.
Is it because of some failing? No, I am Rava. We are great, he says, right? Rather, it must be because of my generation. The ones who just came to try to fire me, right? Well, yes.
It says she'ain during doma yaver.
Right.
It says does not appear. It's not. It's not clear.
Oh, it's interesting. I thought it was in other words, compared to its leader, it is not as wonderful. That's how I understood that piece, right? I could be mistaken, but that's how I understand. In other words, I'm great. What can I do? My generation's not like me. Nebuch. It's really important. By the way, it's the exact opposite Nebuch. I purposely used it, you see? Not just because I love it. It's the exact opposite Nebuch, perhaps, if we're not reading it the Serene way, but we should keep Serene's read alive, but if we're not reading it that way, it's the exact opposite Nebuch of how we started our story. You didn't see it says, Nebuch to you that you have me! And Rava says, Nebuch to me that I have you. Right? That's what's happened, right? That's the bookends of this story, and it's very interesting. So what's my takeaway? If I was going to stop the shiur, which I'm not, I know I said 5 more minutes, but I lied. Okay, 3 more minutes, okay? Because there's one amazing piece I think we have to end with. But if I was going to end the stories here, and I'm a member, I'm the stumba, and I'm arranging these stories, I could have a Rava first, and you didn't see a last if I wanted to. I know it doesn't work generationally, but still, if I wanted to, I could have done it. I could have started with 7 and ended with 1, and then the message would be what? Humility. Mm-hmm. Humility brings the rain. And instead, what's my message here? What brings the rain?
Arrogance. No, the rain doesn't come.
Yafet, the rain doesn't come. Excellent. This does not get resolved. Unlike stories 1 and 4, I don't have rain. I don't have rain. So I have a leader who doesn't think his generation deserves him. I have a people who doesn't want its leader. Right? And you know who else I have in this story? Who else makes an appearance? God. God shows up, right? God shows up because he is the one who suddenly is not listening. And lo and behold, we end this whole series with no rain. right, which I think is so interesting, right? Because, by the way, not in all the stories of the rain come, but in this, but in stories 1 and 4, it comes, and story number 7. And 1 and 4, we were able to see the messages. Humility brings the rain, right? The danger of leadership, the danger of not being self-aware, the power of, yes, being self-aware, and the power of taking responsibility for my community, all of those things bring the rain. The end of the story is I have a leader who's disconnected from his people, and a people who's disconnected from his leader, and the rain never comes. Right? Now, it gets better, my friends, because if you look actually in the last stories on your page, we don't have time to do it all, but it's a parallel to this story, and look how this one ends. I just want you to look at the end. I know we have to end, okay? It's 9:02. We're going to say it's 9:05. Give me 3 more minutes, okay? 9:05. Okay, so look at the end of the story here, guys, and it's Rava again, right? Important here. While we, on the other hand, the same thing, have studied Uksin at 13 sessions, yet Rabbi Yehuda merely took off his shoes and the rain came down, while we cry out in supplication, but there is no one who hears us. Again, it's quite a claim against God. God is not listening to us, okay? But look what happens here, my friends. Is it because of the generation? No. But it is because the Holy One, blessed be He, requires the heart, right? HaKadosh Baruch Hu Liba Bayi, a very beautiful idea, right? God wants your heart, right? As it says, the Lord looks on the heart, which, by the way, my friends, it's so amazing. The Lord looks on the heart, that pasuk, is actually the moment, right, where David HaMelech, where David is chosen to be king. God says, no, you're looking in the wrong place. Don't look at the outsides. Look at the insides, because that's what God wants. So it's amazing, actually, if we think of, we read this story in parallel with how we started. The danger of leadership is there. It is present. Arrogance is always going to be there. Disconnection with the people is always going to be there. But actually, if I have a leader who recognizes that God wants the heart, right, it will be okay. I think that's part of what's happening here. It's a question whether Sanhedrin 106b is an answer to Tanit or, right, actually comes first and Tanit is answering differently. It's a very interesting question, which we don't know the answer to necessarily. There are differences of opinion. But I think I would like to suggest that 106b is actually an answer to Tanit 24b. And the answer is, it's true when I'm disconnected from the people, the rain won't come. But God wants the heart. He doesn't want my learning of Uktin 13 times. That's not what he wants. Right? And there's a beautiful moment of self-awareness from the rabbis. I spend my life in yeshiva all day. But if I'm not able to be with my people, if I can't see my people, it doesn't help anything. If I blame the people for my mistakes, I blame the people that God doesn't listen to me, that I haven't really given my heart. And I think there's a beautiful, amazing moment here where the rabbis are questioning that and are really willing to look deeply inside themselves and ask themselves, does God want my learning or does God want my heart? And with that, we're going to end. Thank you guys so much.